challenging, thought-provoking, insightful. This is God in Country, the collision of faith and politics, hosted by nationally known speaker, Reverend Dr. Sean Michael Greener. Not your typical Rev. Dr. Sean is a proud military veteran, former law enforcement officer, and founder of the internationally regarded Executive Protection Team. Through counseling, elite life coaching, and national speaking, this ninja pastor tells it like it is. This series is biblically and politically engaged with the pedal to the metal. With today's edition of God in Country, here is host and author of the acclaimed yet controversial book, Excellence Killed the Church, How Mediocrity is Destroying America, Dr. Sean Michael Greener.
See, I would contend to you that most people, they don't really want to keep the republic, because they don't really realize that it's going away. And you know what? It takes effort, habit, and long training. It takes, you have to do something. We have been we have been entertained into numbness, just like the Romans did, entertained into numbness. Somebody that knows an awful lot about the Romans is Dr. Steve Turley, really, really super smart guy, folks. We're very fortunate to have him here. He wrote a book that is just out, where it's hot off the presses, Awakening Wonder, A Classical Guide to Truth, Goodness, and Beauty by Dr. Stephen R. Turley, Ph.D. And, you know, he's a theologian. He has a Ph.D. from Durham University. He's a social theorist and a classical Christian educator, a prize-winning classical guitarist, which so far I've yet to be able to hear him play guitar, but I want to do that. And he's a member of the Tall Oaks Classical School. He's a faculty member there in Newcastle, Delaware. He teaches there theology, Greek, and rhetoric. But he's also a professor of fine arts at Eastern University, and his research and writings have appeared in such journals as Christianity, and literature, all kinds of journals there, Calvin Theological Journal, First Things, Touchstone, and the Chesterton Review. And so we're very, very fortunate to have the author of Awakening Wonder, Dr. Steve Turley, join us. Steve, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Sean, the privilege is mine.
Did you get a chance to hear any of our previous guests?
Oh, I did. I felt like I was back in school. I wanted to start taking notes, and I mean, he was framing my whole civic perspective in a whole new way. It's just fantastic stuff.
Cool. Well, we'd love to have you join us. I know you're very busy teaching during the day, but we'd love to have you join us sometime for one of our CSG classes. So, tell me about this book. Tell me, you know, I'm always interested, as a guy who wrote a book, I'm always interested in what drives other people to write a book, because, I know this, but folks, you know, writing a book isn't fun, it's not easy, and unless it's a bestseller, you're not going to make a lot of money on it. So it's really a labor of love. But what drove you to write this book? And tell us about the book.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I think two things drove me to write the book on a book on truth, goodness, and beauty. And I think the first thing was that, historically speaking, truth, goodness, and beauty were considered indispensable to fostering a genuine humanity. And this is because the original harmony that characterized creation has been disrupted by sin, death, and the devil. And it was only by encountering truth, goodness, and beauty as redeemed in Christ that we can experience that original Edenic harmony and thus become truly human. So I wrote the book to invite the reader to encounter truth, goodness, and beauty in such a way as to redeem the senses and sanctify the imagination to a more Eden-like state. But I think a more pressing issue for me is the experience I've had with students at both the high school level and the college level, both Christian institutions, when I've asked them to give me an account for, say, truth or goodness, not bad, they're all right there, but when I ask for beauty in particular, Sean, I'm not kidding when I tell you that what I hear is nothing less than full-blown aesthetic relativism. And if you know how truth, goodness, and beauty work, you know that they come as a unit. They need each other, and they imply one another. And so if one of them has been dislocated to the personal, private, subjective realm, you could be sure the same kind of dislocating processes are going on with the other two. So I like to point out some of the polls I've read on young evangelicals with homosexual marriage that are increasingly accepting of this fad. And I would submit to you that that moral relativism actually can be traced back to an aesthetic relativism. And so I wanted to address that issue of what is beauty, how does it relate to truth, goodness, and beauty, truth and goodness, so as to give our students and parents a full-orbed biblical worldview.
Why do you think the students nowadays don't get this kind of teaching? Why don't they learn these kind of things?
Yeah, a great book for your listeners, a resource would be C.S. Lewis's The Abolition of Man, written back in the 1940s. And it was a critique of British education back then. So this has been brewing for plenty of decades, as I know as you're well aware. Lewis noticed in the modern age has a very different approach to the human person than we used to have. Classical education answered the question, how do I conform my soul to the divine meaning and purpose around me? And the answer was through cultivating wisdom and virtue. Modern education answers a very different question. It's not interested in cultivating the soul to the divine meaning and purpose. No, modern education is interested in conforming purposeless nature to my own desires and my own ambitions. And the way I do that, the answer to that, is through science and technology, the STEM subjects primarily. And so we're living in a time where, if you and I went into just a typical public school, we'll find that students can believe whatever they want about God. They could believe God is Jesus Christ. They could believe God is a pickle. They could believe whatever they want about God. But the moment they step into a science or math classroom, they're confronted with absolute and unquestionable reality necessary for the cultivation of skills that contribute to economic growth. And economic growth is important today because it more effectively conforms reality to our own desires and ambitions. So while classical education sought to foster wisdom and virtue, modern education seeks to foster workers and skills. And C.S. Lewis reminds us that in the classical world, virtue was for the free man while skills were for the slave.
I like one of the quotes that you use, Solzhenitsyn, beauty will save the world. If the two obvious, so straight branches of truth and good are crushed or amputated and cannot reach the light, yet perhaps the whimsical, unpredictable, unexpected branches of beauty will make their way through and soar up to that very place and in this way perform the work of all three. And in that case, it was not a slip of the tongue for Dostoevsky to say, beauty will save the world, but a prophecy. Tell me about that. Tell our audience a little bit more about that. That's powerful stuff.
That is powerful stuff. It is. Solzhenitsyn was writing at the time of the height of the Cold War, where he saw both the West and the Soviet East turning away from our Christian heritage and embracing modern statism. And the problem, as C.S. Lewis saw it as well as Solzhenitsyn, when you've done that, what you've in effect done is you've cut the human person off from the transcendental values, the true, the good, and the beautiful, like your guest previously was talking about with natural law and human nature and the like. We just don't,
nature and nature's God. Yeah.
You got it. We literally it's almost like we can't even think that way anymore. That way of thinking is so foreign to a modernist secular society where the only things we know are science and technology. Those are the only things. All this other stuff you're doing, that's just philosophy, whatever. Well, Solzhenitsyn said, look, even if that's the case, even if everybody completely forgot what we once had, there's something arresting about beauty, true beauty that draws us somewhere. Beauty in the classical world is a physics. It's drawing us like a gravitational pull somewhere. And if it's truly beautiful, by definition, it's going to draw us to the true and the good. And he thought that intellectually we can throw truth out, as we're trying to do in the universities today. You know, morally, we could throw our a moral law, ethics out, replace it with situational ethics or something. But there's something when we're encountering the truly beautiful, it stops us, it arrests us, because it refuses to be chained by our modernist sensibilities. We can't put beauty in a headlock. And it cannot draw us somewhere. And that, for the Greeks and for the early Christians developing all the way through the Reformation, that's the key of beauty. Beauty always draws us to the true and the good and awakens a comparable love within us so we can be human again.
Cosmic piety. Tell me about cosmic piety.
It's a great term. It's a term that classical scholars coined to describe the way the world was once thought of. Before the rise of the modern age, there was this idea that we're all born into a world of divine obligation. Mm-hmm. And this is because the world is filled with divine meaning and purpose. So whether it's the Greeks and the Romans and their gods, or whether it's the Hebrew Shema, you know, hero is the Lord our God, the Lord is one who created heaven and earth, the Christians affirming that in particularly in the resurrection and redemption of Christ, the whole cosmos. The world in which we're living is filled with divine meaning and purpose. And so every person born into the world is born into a world of divine meaning and divine obligation. We're supposed to conform our lives into a harmonious relationship with the cosmos. And this is why prayer and wisdom and knowledge and virtue were so important. This is why the Founding Fathers talking about a republic of virtue. Virtue understands that there are divine obligations embedded in the created order, and we are all obligated to conform our lives into a harmonious relationship with those divine obligations. We're living in a time where we've defined those divine obligations out the window. We've split apart meaning from creation. You know, we live in nature now that has no inherent meaning, it has no inherent purpose. And so now piety, divine obligation, is a totally personal, subjective, preferential reality. If you want to be pious, great, leave me alone. I don't want to have anything to do with it. This is the age we're living in today.
Steve, piety, to be pious now, is a pejorative.
Yes.
People have twisted that word to mean something that it doesn't.
You got it. Absolutely. This is the odd thing. This is the strange thing about the age in which we're living. We're trying to live in a value-free age, and yet we value that. You know, we value our value-free schools. You know, we value our value-free public square. It's something you see it with the Kim Davis situation. Kim Davis is faulted for imposing her own personal religious opinions on other people. What the heck did the Supreme Court just do? you cannot, we're finding even scholars are figuring this out, you cannot define and delineate the limits of religion as a public official without some form of religious reasoning, any more than I could talk about chemistry without some form of scientific reasoning. Mm-hmm. We're living in an age where the only people who are allowed to impose their own religious opinions on an entire population are those who believe they're not religious.
Wow. I hope the audience audience, I hope that you we have people that listen all around the world, and that's a strong statement. And it is interesting to me, the whole discussion of gay marriage, of same-sex marriage. If we believe the numbers that we're given, that's about a 3 to 5% of the population.
Right.
That
right.
It could potentially affect.
Right.
But the reality of it is they say, well, what do you care about me being able to get married, and why do you want to legislate who I love and how I love, and why do you want to keep me out of the hospital? What if my partner goes to the hospital and you want to keep me out of there and you don't want me to be able to make decisions just like you do for your spouse? And why can't we split retirements and be on health benefits and all of these things together? Why can't we do that? Why do you want to deprive me of that? And I always have to laugh and I say, who is doing that?
Right.
I don't know anywhere in the world, as far as the United States, anywhere in our world that we live under here, the laws in which we deal with, I don't know any company right now where it would be less cool, it would be less well received than to say, you know what, you can't be on this plan, and you know what, you can't come back. Let's say somebody ends up in the emergency room and they get admitted to the hospital. Well, are you family? Well, yes, I'm his partner. I'm her partner. There's nowhere in this country that anybody would be denied. And all it takes is some minor estate planning, to get a document that is a durable power of attorney and have a trust. It's very simple, very easy to get. And none of the issue of marriage even comes into play. But, Doc, you know as well as I do, it's not about that. It's really not about that. We're saying it's about, look, you can't legislate who you love. You can't tell me who I can be in relationship with and share in retirements and medical benefits and governmental entitlements, all these things. You can't tell me. Well, we know it's not about that. It's simply
right.
not about that. But because
right.
we don't have a sense of cosmic piety any longer, because piety is, well, he's so pious. So-and-so
right.
is so pious. There was a time, sadly, not that long ago, where to be called pious was good.
Right, absolutely. It's a virtue. It was one of the essential virtues. Going all even back to the Greeks, they couldn't even conceive of education apart from the goal of creating a pious citizen.
One of the things that they say about Kim Davis, the left, the very kind and loving left, the very tolerant left, one of the things they say about this lady is, hey, you know what? She's got a lot of nerve telling us how to live. Look at her. She's been married and divorced multiple times. She's got kids by different husbands. You know, who does she think she is? Why does she
right.
think she's something special? You see now, you know, she's nobody to listen to. And I've been talking about on my show and in my sermons and speeches all across the country, I have been exposing the fact that, look, first of all, she's not telling you what you should or shouldn't do.
Right.
She's saying, because of my faith in God and what I understand about Scripture, I can't do this. I can't swear to it. I can't do this. It violates my faith. And yet so many people, and I'm really mad at a lot of Christians, because they won't stand behind this lady, because they'll say these things very incorrectly. So they'll say, well, who does she think she is? Why, you know, why is it that this woman thinks she's so above all of us? Why does she think she's so better than us? What makes her so pious? She's so pious. She's better than us. She can say, oh, well, I deserve to get married 4 times, but you don't get to get married once.
Right, right. Yeah, I know you're gone. And again, I just find it so interesting, the selective outrage, you know, the moral myopia. Because this is the same questions could be, although altered, of course, thrown to the 5 judges on the Supreme Court. The renowned Harvard law historian Harold Berman long ago recognized that all legal systems are based on beliefs, confessions of faith, creeds. The question is therefore never whether we're going to have a legal system based on and interpreted by creedal commitment, but rather always which one, which creed is going to be governing. And Kim Davis, in her own way, contested the arbitrary privileged status of secular liberalism as the reigning religious paradigm of our time. She's very, very brave, and I think it's a tragedy that Christians have been so secularist. Dare I say it, they've been so cut off from cosmic piety. And they're reconfiguring, they're redefining their Christianity as a modern religion. And modern religions are personal, they're private, totally subjective, because we live in a world that's known only through scientific reasoning, which exposes the fact that all our beliefs about gods or the God or divine meaning and purpose, all of them are just cultural fabrications, because we all know the world is just governed by biological, chemical, and physical causal laws. So ironically, when Christians, adopt this position that she needs to keep her religious opinions to herself, they ironically are perpetuating a secular liberal paradigm.
Well, so what do you make of the statement that, look, Kim Davis, she gave an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America?
Oh, yeah. Well, that, you were just talking about that, right? I mean, you're going to get into the minutiae in terms of Kentucky law versus federal law and so on. For me, the issue is not so much of her upholding the law. She is upholding the law. And you can look at it from different vantage points, but I think the key is she's upholding the law as it is understood in accordance with the cosmic piety defined in Christian terms. We have to understand that apart from the Christian faith, Ravi Zacharias has said this beautifully, we would never have said all men are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
Secularism could not have possibly said it, because secularism does not believe in creation. And it certainly does not believe in equality when it comes to the womb. So there's the only way we could have ever said all men are created equal is through a Judeo-Christian conception of the world. That's what she's operating from. So she'll be happy to administer the laws of the land, but not when somebody comes out and says 2 + 2 = 5.
Well, that brings me to one thing, and we're almost out of time, so I want to get this in. You teach in a very classical education environment. It's really Tall Oaks. They just won a huge award. They were mentioned in Delaware Today magazine. They're ranked very, very highly. They're widely respected. Really an impressive, impressive school. Really, the big part of that is because of professors like Dr. Stephen Turley, professor and author. You know, this is education hearkening to the old days when you really taught a student to think. You taught a student so much of the Common Core style education isn't focused anymore on facts. On realities, on cosmic piety. It's focused on feelings. It's focused on, well, I feel this or that. And it totally distorts the reality or the truth based on the feeling the person has, what they want, a certain feeling that they have.
Right.
So that being said, in your book, Awakening Wonder, Classical Guide to Truth, Goodness, and Beauty, with that being said, where do you stand on the whole Common Core thing?
Oh, yeah, the whole Common Core thing is, as I understand it, is rooted in the whole fact-faith dichotomy, the knowledge and belief dichotomy that's the reigning paradigm for modern education today. So in classical education, the world is filled with divine meaning and purpose. We're conforming our souls to that divine meaning and purpose through wisdom, the acquiring of wisdom, knowledge, mm-hmm. and virtue. So as Christians, we affirm truth, goodness, and beauty ultimately are revealed in and through Christ. And so we're teaching our students to think of the totality of the world, the totality of the cosmos, in light of Christ the Logos, the one in whom all things holds together. That's not Common Core. So, right? I mean, and therefore, by definition, it seems to me we've got a problem there, because what Common Core is going to do is it's going to push the idea that science, technology, engineering, math, you know, the STEM subjects, that's where true unquestioned reality is found. And if we can train the mind to more and more think in machine-like terms via user's manuals, spreadsheets, and the like, then we're creating an educated mind, because education is ultimately about creating workers with skills. In terms of the ability to think about the ultimate questions of life, who are we? What does it mean to be human? Why are we here? What is the nature of reality? Who is God? What are my responsibilities before him? How may I be saved? These fundamental questions go totally unanswered in the Common Core curriculum, and therefore I would argue they are answered. They're answered in that these are personal, private, faith-based belief questions that have no place in our public square. And then we ask why we're in the position we are today.
It's tragic, isn't it?
It is.
Dr. Stephen Turley, I so appreciate. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to come on the show again sometime in the real near future. I have so many more questions I want to ask you, and I know that lots and lots of folks have a ton of questions for you, but unfortunately we're out of time. But I really, really appreciate you coming on, and I would really, really enjoy chatting with you longer about this on the air, because I think – the book, just in the little bit, I've just read the part that's released. I didn't get a chance to get the book in my hands yet, so I had to read the excerpts that are available. And that being said, it's really, really triggered me. My seminary education and divinity school education is very much like that, you know, what you're talking about. And I know you are absolutely revered as a teacher, and, you know, I appreciate you taking the time to come on today, and I wish you the best with your book. And folks, you know, you've got to go to fill your mind full of truth, and you need a classical guide to truth, goodness, and beauty, and a great place to start. It's only $7.95. Classical Academic Press, Classical Subjects Creatively Taught, Awakening Wonder, A Classical Guide to Truth, Goodness, and Beauty. All you have to do is search Dr. Stephen R. Turley, and you will be able to get this book, and you'll be glad you did. It's very powerful. It's incredibly beautifully written, and I don't think you'll ever regret the time that you spend immersing yourself in it. Folks, I'm so sorry that we're out of time. I would love to have more time with Dr. Turley. Dr. Turley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sean. It's my pleasure.
All right. Take good care. Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. There is a powerful, powerful series of lessons, both through Bill Norton, citizen scholar, and clearly and obviously Dr. Turley is obviously a very brilliant man. We've interfaced different times before, we appreciate you listening. Folks, send us messages through Facebook, private messages there. Send me messages through theninjapastor.com, through the Contact Me page, or drseangreener.com, any of those things, through Twitter, Facebook, any of those things. We'd love to hear from you. We really, really appreciate you listening, and we look forward to being with you again next Sunday. Don't forget about Second Call Defense. Go to Second Call Defense, type in Ninja, and you'll save some money. It's a powerful, powerful thing. We're going to talk more about that next week. Thank you for joining us, folks. All the best.
Join us next time for the collision of faith and politics. And please follow this show at www.blogtalkradio.com/TheNinjaPastor. And follow Dr. Sean on Twitter at The Ninja Pastor and on Facebook at www.facebook.com/God in Country Radio and at www.drseangreener.com. In the meantime, Dr. Sean will be fighting for you and for this great country. Thank you for joining in this fight.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a 1930s gangster using Progressive's Name Your Price tool.
Yeah, see? This Name Your Price tool really lays it all out on the table, see? All I had to do was tell her how much I wanted to spend, and it gave me options in one place, see? Makes all of it easy to see?
It's easy to find insurance that fits your budget with the Name Your Price tool. Only at Progressive.com.
I might need glasses so I can see more when I'm doing gangster stuff, see?
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Price and coverage match limited by state law.